Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
And welcome to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy 94.9. I'm Jodie, joined today by Greg and Lindsay. How are you both today?
Gorgeous, Jodie, just gorgeous.
And I'm great too. It's fabulous. We've got a beautiful, nice spring overcast day in Melbourne. But, you know, there's someone that sent us a message just now. Peter Stevenson is in Buenos Aires in Argentina. And he said he's streaming Detours on his app. On his little phone over there. So I hope your $8,000 data charge on the
is worth it, Peter, is worth it. And that man just travels around the world. He's just amazing, isn't he? Like, you follow Peter on Facebook, and one day, like today's in Buenos Aires, tomorrow he'll be in Shanghai or somewhere. He's incredible. I want to be him.
Is the tax man chasing him or something?
I'm not really sure about that.
No, but I am, Peter.
But isn't it interesting when you look at the Detours Facebook page, how many of our regular listeners are doing fabulous things travelling all around the world? And sometimes I feel a bit sad that I'm not going somewhere and I need to plan ahead. I need to have a holiday plan. What about you, Greg? Have you got a holiday plan?
Do you know what? I reckon there's a bit of Northern Territory coming up for you. Maybe a bit of Ayers Rock, Alice Springs, and I might even come in your suitcase for this little trip, Jodes, if you're up to it. Maybe we can drag Lindsay along as well. What do you reckon?
Oh, trunk for me, Dals. Trunk for me. But I actually spent last weekend at Gembrook in an absolutely beautiful house. It was a friend's of a friend's house on, I think it was about 400 acres. And I have to admit, I haven't been up that part of Victoria for ages. And it was just divine. It rained the whole time. But I think when you're in the country and you've got an open fire and it's raining and a good book, you don't need anything else. But we went into, I think it was Emerald, and had a bit of a cruise around the town and went to a chook place and had some poor old crucified chook. But it was really, really absolutely beautiful up
there. There's so much to see in the hills around Melbourne, in the Dandenong Ranges.
Oh. There sure is. Well, I was just going to do a bit of translation for some of our international listeners, a chook being chicken.
A chook.
And, the Dandenong Ranges is a great spot outside of Melbourne and only about an hour's drive away.
Yeah.
Lots of great things to do and see, lots of national parks. Of course, the Healesville Sanctuary and also the Puffing Billy.
We saw Puffing Billy, and honestly, to see Puffing, there's something just so romantic about that little train, honestly. And it was like, there's Puffing Billy, and I guarantee you, know, the two passengers, their windows went down, and I was one of them, like, oh, look, you know, it was just beautiful. But if you can get away up there, absolutely superb. And we were very fortunate, the house that we were staying in was just out of this world, and it was just glorious.
Fantastic.
Of course, I missed you both.
Oh, we missed you too.
Now, speaking of missing us, people all week have been hanging out to see who our special guest is this week, Jodie.
That's right, and we're delighted to welcome to the studio Dan Taylor, who is the Consul General and Trade Commissioner to Victoria and Tasmania from the New Zealand Government. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jodie. Great to be here.
Oh, terrific to have you, Dan. Now,
Hang on, we got a test there. That accent was too good to be New Zealand. How long have you been here, Dan?
Next week I would have been in Victoria 1 year.
Oh, he said next week, so
this
is the genuine article.
And don't ask me for the number between 5 and 7. That is a dead giveaway.
So I'm always fascinated to know how people got to do the gig that they do. Now, you're a young guy who has a young family, and yet you've got a role which, you know, for all intents and purposes, has lots of responsibility and, you know, make sure that people can trade across between the two countries of New Zealand and Australia. How did you get this gig?
Well, first of all, I would have to start by saying I feel enormously fortunate to have the role that I've got here in Melbourne. It's an amazing opportunity, great city to be in. I, prior to the current role, was involved in exporting, actively involved in exporting pip fruit, apples out of New Zealand to everywhere except Australia, pretty much, and was a client of the Trade and Enterprise team, so the Economic Development Agency of New Zealand. And I thought at the time, there's an outfit I could work for. And fast forward a few years, and I managed to find a way into the organisation, and the opportunities sort of presented themselves from there. There's a few cities around the world, Melbourne being one of them, where the Trade Commissioner and Consul General roles are joined, and that works really, really well because the political and the business are so closely intertwined, and it means I get to work right across the spectrum with an amazing number of really, really interesting people.
Fantastic. And I wonder as well if people are listening and sort of thinking, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Well, one of the things that I've always wanted to do is be a diplomat or, you know, a consul general or a trade commissioner, or I don't know, something like that. But what's involved in a typical day for you?
There's no such thing as a typical day, really, which is what makes it so so exciting. We support New Zealanders that are in need, that are looking for information, that are looking for support. We work with New Zealand companies that are looking to either enter or grow into the Australian market. We work with New Zealand politicians and Australian politicians who have a, thankfully, a really close working and functional working relationship to facilitate a lot of that two-way communication. So it can be anything and everything.
I'm just in awe of the beautiful country you come from, and I'm really keen to know, just sitting here today talking about New Zealand and being in Australia, which is also God's own country, but do you start to feel a little bit homesick, and you know, how do you maintain that connection back with your home nation?
Well, thankfully, New Zealand's not too far away. It's a lot easier to get to New Zealand from Melbourne than it is from London or LA or places like that. So it's just a short pond hop, really.
pond hop. A little dinghy in a way,
exactly,
you go.
Exactly. Exactly.
So your home here in Melbourne is really just your batch.
That's right. Yeah. Just or crib. Batch. Or crib, crib if you're from the South Island.
Crib. Can someone translate, please?
Your holiday home.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes. And the time difference works. We're only a couple of hours difference to New Zealand. So it's really, it's not difficult keeping in contact. I think, like any move, you miss people and family and friends. But we've been lucky to have a number of them visit in the last 12 months, and I'm sure there'll be more to come in the next few years.
That's for sure. We'd love to take their New Zealand dollars here in Australia.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
They'd be happy to spend them, I'm sure.
Well, stay with us till 1 o'clock here on Joy, where the Detours Travel Show, and you can listen online, www.joy.org.au, listen live. You can download a smartphone app from the site, and we'd love to hear from you. You can SMS us 0427-JOY-949. Now, Dan has chosen some New Zealand music, and we're going to play some of that, and then when we come back, we'll hear a little bit more about why you chose it and why you like it. Stay tuned here on Joy.
Go on, have a little peek at this. Keep us on air. Become a member today. Call 1300-JOY-949. JOY-949.
And that's correct. You're listening to the fabulous Joy 94.9. And the last track that you heard was Dominion Road by a band called The Mutton Birds. That's an interesting name for a band, Dan. The Mutton Birds.
Indeed. It's a bird that lives down on the islands south of New Zealand, and they're great eating.
Yeah, so they don't dress up as lamb at all, do they?
No, they try not to.
Don't.
No.
So you can really eat them?
You can eat
them. Yeah.
If you can catch them.
If you can catch them. So next time you're in New Zealand, which will have to be soon, get onto it.
Now, it strikes me that the people that first discovered Australia and New Zealand, well, let's face it, both were Indigenous people, the Aboriginals and the Maori were there perhaps 700 or 800 years before the white man. But the first white people, first Europeans, actually utilised some of the native wildlife, and probably the mutton birds were one.
Absolutely.
Is that something they got oil from? And do you still have kerosene lamps down there?
No, we've recently moved to electricity, which has been a huge development for the country. We're extremely proud.
Good on you, Dan.
That must help in terms of trade, exports,
indeed,
tourism.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll get an airport next and then we'll be unstoppable.
Wow. I guess there's no more bathing in big tubs and things either, running water now and stuff like that.
In most parts of the country.
Good to hear. You're horrible, Greg.
Now, if you've just tuned in, this is the Detours Travel Show with Joe. Jodie, Lindsay and Greg. Our special guest is Dan Taylor, who's the New Zealand Consul General here in Melbourne for Tasmania as well, Victoria and Tasmania, and the Trade Commissioner. Now, travel between New Zealand and Australia is pretty prolific. In our experience, a lot of people tend to think of New Zealand as a destination for when they get older. How much travel actually happens between the two countries?
I think you're absolutely right. There is a perception from Australian travellers that it's an easy place to get to, and so they'll tick off other, perhaps more exotic locations first. That said, there was still over a million Australians travelled to New Zealand last year. Not quite so many coming back the other way, because there'd be a quarter of our population. We can't afford to lose that many.
No,
but still a large amount of cross-border travel. And we've seen developments like the Smart Gate, for example, that mean that it's so much easier to get between Australia and New Zealand.
So what is the Smart Gate?
The Smart Gate is a customs tool that allows you to basically self-check through immigration rather than having to wait for a passport officer. So it just speeds the whole process up, which makes it a whole lot more enjoyable, I think, for what is a short flight.
Do you know, I'd like one small modification to Smart Check. I want to be able to bring as many of the glorious stone fruits and all the other fantastic things you can get in New Zealand that really are difficult to find here. I'm sure we grow a lot of stuff here, but in New Zealand, especially South Island, Dan, I think of your place, your home, and I think of all the glorious fruits you can just pick up on the side of the road and buy in these small little stands. Is that part of what you talk about when you're the trade representative here as well?
Absolutely. New Zealand and Australia have a lot of commonalities in what they produce. We're both good at doing a lot of stuff off the land. So New Zealand needs to find the gaps to plug in Australia rather than trying to duplicate what's already done here, I think. And stone fruit's a great example. Dare I mention it, I think pip fruit apples is also another huge opportunity. And dairy will always be big, and we're quite happy to keep sending you our Sauvignon Blanc if you'll keep sending us your Shiraz.
Well, the colder climate must be something that does lend itself to particular produce.
Absolutely, and New Zealand's a really long, skinny country, so it's got a lot of different weather conditions from... I might be going a bit far to call it subtropical. There's not a lot of bananas growing. But at the top of the North Island, where they grow a lot of avocados, for example, down to the bottom of the South Island that produces fantastic stone fruit, cherries, that sort of stuff, that thrive on the cold winters and the warm summers. So, yeah, it's a really good producer, a land-based producer.
And you mentioned before, Greg, about Indigenous cultures and in particular the Maoris in New Zealand. From your perspective, Dan, what would you say are some of the achievements with the Maori population and the community in New Zealand?
Well, I think if you go back to 1840, New Zealand signed the Treaty of Waitangi. We don't have a written constitution, so we're a little unusual in that regard. But what we have is a document that was signed that is very much a founding document for the nation, and that sets out in pretty broad terms the conditions under which Māori and European will engage. And it's a living document. It's still quoted regularly today. It's still referenced in legislation. So there is a joined upness, if you like, between the Māori and the European approach. There'll always be differences that you get amongst any two communities, but by and large, the work is done hand in hand, and with a sort of a shared end goal in sight, which is really positive. I mean, Māori, part Māori, they make an enormous contribution to New Zealand society in all spheres: business, sport, music, arts, you name it. They're fantastic contributors, and very much just part and parcel of society.
And before we came on the program, we were reflecting on the World Cup rugby at the moment. And Lindsay, you had some reflections on the footage that you've been watching.
Yeah, because I saw the haka, you know, it's before the match, isn't it? Because I'm not into sports at all. But what was absolutely amazing was that the crowd had joined in, and there were these little kids, like they were really, really little, and they're putting on the fiercest of faces. It was just unbelievable. And the whole thing was that you know, like we've just had our grand final and rugby, and now it's the rugby grand finals. What is it, the World Cup or something like that?
Indeed.
And the thing is that you sort of get this impression, though, that in New Zealand it's even more of a culture than what it is in Australia. It's sort of more of the religion or whatever. I mean, we see kids, you know, waving around, but there's something really cultural about your sport that we sort of, I don't know, maybe lack a little bit.
I think one of the big differences that I've noticed is that New Zealand is a one-sport nation, mm-hmm. oftentimes based around rugby. Australians are split across a number of codes, including AFL, which I'm slowly getting my head around.
Don't worry, I've never got my head around it.
So it is a real passion, New Zealand play their quarterfinal tomorrow night. It wouldn't be a good time to try and get anything else done in New Zealand.
The game that stops the nation.
Indeed.
Incredible. And the other thing I was going to ask, like, I've never been to New Zealand. I'm one of those naughty Australians that have never been.
That's going to have to change.
It will change. But one of the things is, like, you were talking about the climate earlier, and I think a lot of us here have this impression of New Zealand just being cold, just being really, really cold. The best time to travel to New Zealand, Dan?
Well, it really depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for a beach holiday, then you'd probably look at anywhere between December and March. Mm-hmm. And there are any number of locations that you could head to. By the same token, if you're into winter sports, New Zealand is a winter sports mecca, and the skiing's fantastic from sort of July through to September. So it really does depend on what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Now, what he doesn't tell you is you can actually, people say Melbourne's all seasons in one day. You can get that in New Zealand as well. Now, I flash back to a bit of time in Alexandra in the central of the South Island, and I was getting sunburnt in Alexandra Township, and I hopped in a little car and drove up this four-wheel drive track up the side of the hill, and I got snowed on across the top of the range.
How incredible.
What happened after lunch?
And you're right. There is so much to do and see. It's just an extraordinary vista and place to experience.
Now, when we come back, we'll explore the resilience of New Zealanders and of course, in February 2011 with the tragic earthquakes. What we'd like to hear and unpack is how have people rebuilt and what is it that you can go and see and do when you're in New Zealand? Stay with us till 1 o'clock. I'm Jodie, joined by Greg and Lindsay. This is Detours here on Joy 94.9.
Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Become a Joy member so we can give you the best shows every day. Call 1300-JOY-949. 1300-JOY-949.
Stormy weather at 57 Mount Pleasant Street. Always take the weather with you.
Fun people and great shows.
Joy 94.9.
You can have your say. SMS 0427 Joy 949.
And it is 12:35 here in Melbourne, Australia. You're listening to Joy Melbourne 94.9. I'm Jodie, joined by Greg and Lindsay. This is Detours, the travel show. Now, that fantastic track before was by Crowded House, Weather With You. And thanks, Dan Taylor, who's our special guest today from the New Zealand Consul
Kiwi
General.
Kiwi music.
Music, yeah.
Even though Australians try to claim Crowded House.
Oh, we do. We do.
And the moment you're out the studio, we will again.
Yeah. But just about New Zealand and talent, just very briefly, Dan, the amazing thing is that there's 4 million, I think the population of New Zealand is something like 4 million.
About 4.3.
And yet the amount of talent that has come out of your country has been astronomical.
Absolutely. We like to think that right across the sphere, we punch above our weight, if you like.
Mm.
I think it's almost a bit of little brother syndrome. We want to prove ourselves on the world stage. We feel a long way from anywhere. It's fine to test ourselves against other New Zealanders, but we love to think that we can compete on the global stage. And in a lot of aspects we do. And I agree. I think New Zealanders are amazing.
Yeah, very successfully.
And obviously one of the areas of competition in the world scale is in tourism and travel, and New Zealand has always got a presence in terms of marketing, not just in Australia but globally, as a safe, clean, adventurous wilderness to go and explore. But for a lot of people within New Zealand and people around the world, the tragic events of the earthquake in Christchurch in the South Island in February 2011 must have been just devastating for many people.
Absolutely. It was an absolutely horrific event. 181 deaths, not to mention all of the injuries and loss of property. They've got a very long road ahead of them as far as recovery goes, but they will bounce back. They're a stoic bunch, in particular, down that part of the country. The challenge at the moment is ensuring that the rebuild happens as quickly as possible, but as safely as possible. The main impact has happened in the central business district, and so a lot of offices, retail have been hit pretty hard. Certain suburbs have been badly damaged from a residential perspective, and then there's tracts that are for all intents and purposes untouched. That incongruity there is a real challenge, I think, for people to get their head around, because it's that normalness that doesn't make news. It's the spectacular that does.
So I've got two questions for you. First one is, most New Zealanders, I suppose, have a personal connection to someone that lives in or around Christchurch. What was it for you, seeing that tragedy unfold, living here in Australia at the time?
For me, it was Facebook photos, which is so often the way. People's property that they'd taken time-lapse photos of effectively, and it had gone from a normal grassed backyard to what looked like just a huge mud pool over the course of an hour
and that's liquefaction.
Liquefaction, a word that nobody had heard previously, but that we now have as part of our everyday language. Incredible.
And that's when the ground shakes that much, and the vibration actually turns it into almost like a fluid.
That's right, and it just rises to the surface. Yeah. And what that means is that the surface is no longer solid enough to rebuild on. The whole area becomes unusable from a construction perspective.
So that rebuilding is the second part of my question. That's around not just how you rebuild the society and the supports and the networks around that and the physical structures, but from your side here, being a trade person, being a person representing New Zealand industry here in Australia, how do you put it back in place at the other end so that you can do them justice in your role here in Australia?
Well, I think that the resilience that I mentioned earlier came through very much in a business sense, and companies found a way to get going as quickly as they could, whether that meant working out of shipping containers that were turned into offices, or shifting a production site temporarily so that they could continue to meet orders. There was a realization that as much normality as possible was a good thing. It was probably quite fortunate that the airport was undamaged, so travel continued. The port was damaged, but not really, really badly, so trade could continue. And it's those elements of normality kicking back in that help, I think, to get back on your feet a wee bit.
Plus a good bit of just ingenuity and hard angle grease. And
absolutely.
And you Kiwis have been arm in arm with Australia for a century around that sort of stuff. So,
oh, very much so.
And I think some of us went over and gave a bit of assistance as well.
The support that New Zealand, or Canterbury in particular, got from Australia was just breathtaking. One of the most humbling experiences of my time here was going out to Melbourne Airport and farewelling the Victorian police that had volunteered to go to Christchurch, and they had done it without having to be asked, and they couldn't get on the plane quick enough. And they were joined by some police from South Australia at the same time, and they were itching to get on the plane so they could help what they saw as their mates across the Tasman. When they arrived at Christchurch Airport, they got an impromptu standing ovation from everybody, and that's sort of very practical on the ground support. State and federal governments financially were extremely generous at a time that New Zealand was in need, and it really showed again, I think, just how strong the relationship between Australia and New Zealand is.
So if you're travelling to that area now, what's the game plan? What should we do to be there spending and supporting the local industry that's redeveloping and regrowing? What shouldn't we do?
Well, I haven't been there myself since February, but the information coming out is that major shakes are basically non-existent. Now, there are still aftershocks, and they will continue for a period of time, but the airport's fully functional. Christchurch is very much a gateway to a lot of the rest of the South Island. So the transport's all still working. There's been very strong effort put into ensuring that buildings are as sound as they possibly can be, so you're not going to be put up in anywhere that's going to be an earthquake risk. Tourism is important. Very important to New Zealand. It's taken very seriously. It's done well. I'd have no hesitation myself in heading to Christchurch. I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Well, that's great. We certainly made sure that when the tragedy of the earthquakes occurred, that here on Detours we were talking up, I guess, that all the different things that people can do and see safely. And, you know, as you mentioned, tourism's a vital economy, part of the economy, and it's really important that people can get out and contribute to those local jobs, local industries, local gourmet food sellers and everything that makes a fabric of a community work. Now, Dan, we just had an SMS from one of our listeners who asked, do you know how many New Zealanders live in Australia?
Not exactly, and I couldn't name them all. but it's the number's about 450,000, and 55,000 of those are in Victoria. And they're the ones that self-identify as New Zealanders. So those that have a New Zealand connection, that number would be a lot higher. There's about 1 million New Zealanders in total overseas. So you can see what a huge chunk of them live in Australia. And as I understand it, of any country of scale, which we like to think of ourselves as, we have the second biggest population offshore behind only Ireland. So New Zealanders are great travellers, and there's certainly a lot of them here in Australia, and we like to think that they've made a contribution to Australian society in the same way that Australians who have travelled the other way have.
Well, you have. You gave us the New Zealand joke.
Indeed.
And Russell Crowe.
And Russell Crowe,
yeah. And Crowded House.
And Dane
Keery.
Farlap.
Oh, hang on.
Pavlova.
Was Farlap really a Kiwi, was
yeah.
he?
Absolutely.
He
Timaru.
Yeah, he's a Kiwi.
Joe Bielke-Peterson.
There's one that just slipped my mind totally. Who was that again?
Haven't they stuffed him and isn't he like a giant cane toad?
He actually stands next door to Farlap in the museum. There's, you know, Joe and
He actually predates Farlap, actually.
Don't talk ill of the dead.
They can't have
Was he ever
back.
Alive, Joe? Was he ever alive?
I'm not sure.
Is his wife gone yet? The pumpkin scone lady?
Don't know.
What was her name?
If you're listening from another place, Flo. Hello
yeah,
from us.
It was Flo. That was it. No pumpkin scones. Heaven forbid.
No, look, we do love New Zealand. New Zealand is extraordinary. And I'm not even a New Zealander, but I regard myself as a New Zealander.
Do you? Why?
While we're in Dan's presence, I think I can be a New Zealander.
We're happy to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, it's interesting you talked about before about the numbers of New Zealanders in Australia and how they identify themselves, because this whole concept of place of birth, cultural identity, nationality are quite odd, because sometimes people can have multiple identities that they feel very passionate about, even though they might not have lived in New Zealand for 20 years.
Well, one of the wonderful things that I've noticed being in Australia is how people will make themselves part of Australia, but will also hold a presence back to another part of the world. Mm. So they'll refer to themselves as Kiwi Australians or Irish Australian. And to me, that's where the world is heading. We're such a fluid global market now that people move so frequently to just identify with the place of birth, in many cases is to do an injustice for what you've actually achieved and experienced in the rest of your life, I think.
And one of the ways that we've worked together, both from Travellers Aid, the organisation I work for, and the New Zealand Consul General, is, of course, when people don't necessarily plan ahead for those journeys to Australia or they're in need and hardship. Can you tell us about, in your role as Consul General, some of the work that you do for New Zealanders who are in need?
That's obviously a vital part of our role, but also a challenging part. There's limited financial support that, and the New Zealand government's certainly not alone in this approach, that is available to help New Zealanders in need. So our role is very much informational, and we play a strong connecting role as well, whether that is back to family in certain instances, or whether it's to agencies like Travellers Aid. That's a key part of our role, is helping New Zealanders in need at times when it's difficult to get where you want to be going, to navigate those channels. And you know, I can't speak highly enough of the work of Travellers Aid. This is not a this is not a paid advertisement, but it's agencies like that really do make our job possible. We try and get the message across as much as we possibly can that if you can't afford travel insurance, you probably can't afford to travel, even to Australia, and likewise Australians to New Zealand. The cost of say medical repatriation, if that's needed, is enormous, and insurance is worth its weight, I think.
I think you're absolutely right, Dan. I think too, because there's such a camaraderie and mateship, for want of a better word, between New Zealand and Australia, common language, you know, a lot of common cultural aspects, that sometimes people make assumptions that it's all sort of pretty much same but just different location, and obviously there are reciprocal benefits between Australia and New Zealand for some you know, safety nets. But what are some of the advice that you would give to Australians going to New Zealand? You mentioned travel insurance as one of those, but what if someone was picking up and moving and, you know, going to start a new life in New Zealand?
I think that moving between Australia and New Zealand is actually really quite straightforward when you look at it in comparison to moving to other parts of the world. The big advice I would always give is do your homework and get good advice. Places like the consulate can give generic advice, but we're not immigration experts, we're not tax experts. There are people out there that are, though, and making sure you get all of that done beforehand can just turn it into a seamless process, which is what it should be. And the agencies on both sides do collaborate really closely, so it does make it possible to move in a pretty straightforward manner, I think.
Now, coming up on the hour at 1 o'clock, we have Cravings with Pete Dillon, and a lot of our restaurateurs are actually Kiwis, and you'll hear whoever's on Cravings today will be fabulous as usual with Pete. But in New Zealand, what are some of the culinary delights one can have? Because, I mean, the pavlova, one says, comes from Queensland, but it also could have come from New Zealand as well.
No, I know the history of the pavlova.
Where did it come from, Lynn?
It's named after the ballerina Pavlova, because she toured in she came to Australia, and they she was Russian. She came to Australia and they wanted a dessert to celebrate. And you've probably got a different story to this, Dan. And they wanted a cake, like, you know, the Melba toast. We seem to name every food after people. Anyway, so, you know, Mavis from Blackburn or something created this thing, and they called it the Pavlova, after Pavlova the dancer.
Now, what do you think, Dan?
Well, I was just going to ask Jodie, while I answer your earlier question, to bring up on Wikipedia what it says, because that is the final word on Pavlova.
Oh, of course, Wikipedia.
Totally. I mean, whatever Dan, Wikipedia
course,
says
he was
is
on
right.
There editing Wikipedia half an hour ago.
So we'll see what that comes up with. But as far as culinary delights out of New Zealand, again, you can sort of trace your travels through New Zealand by the food you're eating, whether it's bluff oysters right down the bottom of the South Island, whitebait fritters on the west coast of the South Island, absolutely delightful. I didn't try them till I was about 12 years old because my grandmother had me convinced that I wouldn't like them.
And you love them.
All that meant was more for the grown-ups. Obviously, we do wine particularly well. We do a lot of beef and lamb comes out in New Zealand, but some really fine bespoke products, cheeses, those sort of things, olive oils. If it can be produced in New Zealand, you can pretty much guarantee it'll be of a really high quality.
There's big discussion around particular exotic fruit issues about bringing New Zealand apples or pears into Australia, and Australia sees itself as a bit of a quarantine. What do you contribute to that discussion about bringing things across the ditch?
I believe, and using that apples as an example, I believe that to the advantage of both New Zealand and Australia, we should be doing all we can to keep the borders as open as possible, whatever the product. I certainly wouldn't downplay concerns around biosecurity. I think that's really important because we are both primary producing nations. But I think using the apples example, the science, independent science, really clearly shows that mature apples, so those that you would buy in a supermarket, aren't going to carry the fire blight disease that there's concern for. So I think that it could be a real win-win to bring more New Zealand apples into Australia. There's a range of varieties that we grow that are not grown in Australia.
And isn't that glorious when you're down there in the South Island?
Absolutely. So from a consumer point of view, New Zealand apples would be a good thing.
But you're saying go with the commercial side, but definitely as a traveller, folks, don't pack in anything from the agricultural parts and bring in your bags. If
no.
you get past my dog that's now working up at Sydney Airport, if you get past him and you come into Australia, you might actually bring fire blight or other diseases into Australia.
Yeah, it's not worth the risk for either country. We're both so reliant on primary produce that those rules are in place for a really good reason. To try and flout them is just asking for trouble, I think.
So Wikipedia.
Well, it does say that it's a meringue-based dessert, which we knew, and it's named after the Russian ballet dancer Anna Pavlova.
So, two ticks.
Hello, yes. Two ticks.
Now, the dessert is believed to be created in the honour of the dancer, either during or after one of her tours to Australia and New Zealand in the 1920s.
A bit murky there.
We have to go, you know, hotsy-totsy on this one, Dan.
The nationality of its creator has been a source of argument between the two nations for many years.
And in the studio.
But formal research indicates New Zealand is the more probable source.
No further questions,
Watch out, Dan. Watch out, Dan.
And that last edit was done by Dan.
you never know. But it's interesting, like, you know, I'm an avid SBS watcher and documentary watcher. And one of the things I just love about New Zealand is, I mean, it's so small. Like a friend of mine said, look, really, you can fly, you can basically walk around New Zealand. It'll take you a wee while, of course, but it'd be a nice way to do it. Like she's actually walked around Tasmania. She's as mad as a cut snake. But but one of the things is whenever I see New Zealand, and dare I admit, I've actually caught a little bit of that show where the police, what's it called, you know, random breath testing or something, New Zealand.
Highways.
That's it. I don't watch those shows, believe me, but I've seen a little bit of it, and the New Zealand police are so calm and so polite that these guys just sort of hand themselves in. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I was speeding and, yeah, I've had a couple of bongs and, yeah, I've done it wrong and there's, you know, a six-pack in the back of the car. And the police are like, yeah, well, that's okay. You better come down the station with us. Everything seems so incredibly zen, even crime.
Medical authorities, Andita has warned that those things just hurt.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you just watch your show. If that was a show, you'd be like, oh, yeah, right, mate, get out the car. Yeah, yeah, scuds bucket. But you guys have this totally different approach. Whether it's there for the cameras, I don't know, but it's really, it's zen.
I think a fair bit of that comes from the reasonably small communities that New Zealand has and is. It's quite probable that the guy pulling you over you play rugby with on the weekend or something.
Oh, okay.
So there's connections there. And there's also, I think, a laid-back, quite sort of egalitarian attitude that does come through in everyday life, which is great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Look, we're sold. I think we might cancel Central Australia, Jodes. Let's go to New Zealand and we'll cut.
I'll go anywhere, actually.
Lynn's with us too. Yeah, it'd be cool.
Now, Dan, we've got a few minutes before we finish up, but just lastly, I know that your job is not a 9-to-5 sort of job in terms of the work you do as the Trade Commissioner and Consul General. Have you got any holiday plans that you'd like to share with us?
We're heading back to New Zealand shortly to catch up with family and for a wedding. We'd love to see a bit more of Australia. We've seen very little of Australia so far. I'd like to go up to the top of Australia and have a good look around there. And parts of Southeast Asia really interest me. I spent a bit of time working previously in China. I'd like to go back there. Mm-hmm. And I've never been to India, and that fascinates me.
So. Well, now, Jodie, look... Listeners, as we all know out there in Detours Land, Jodie is the veritable encyclopedia of what's
guru.
On in India. She
I don't
knows.
Think you can call me a guru. I've guru had it been twice.
Guru of Indian travel. That's how I've been promoting you.
Oh, thank you.
Swami Wilma, we call her.
I better go get my business cards reprinted.
Swami Wilma. That was good.
Oh, you're funny. Dan, it's been delightful to have you here in the studio today talking about all things New Zealand and, of course, Australia, a very close relationship over many, many years. And well done to the work that you and your very small team, I think people probably think that you've got a bunch of people doing a whole lot of things, but, you know, it's a very small group
very
of people doing
team.
A lot of hard
no
work.
No one over 5'1".
Are you a horror?
Absolutely. Very small team who do an amazing job.
They do.
How many in your team? I mean, we can't just... gloss over that. How many people in your team?
At the moment, there is three of us in the office. It becomes four on Monday, and we'll head towards six in the near future. So very small.
It's tiny, and you're doing a lot of stuff to Absolutely. Give that New Zealand footprint a broader approach here in Victoria. So it's really good.
And I'll tell you what, Dan and his team, and Maeve Kennedy in particular, very well networked and in the community social services, in business, in tourism, and do a lot of great work. So thanks for joining us today.
It was great to be here. Thanks,
Terrific.
Jodie.
Have a great weekend. Now, coming up very soon, we will have Cravings and with Pete Dillon. And next week on Detours, next Saturday at 12 noon, we'll be interviewing Melba Marchison.
Now, oh, fantastic.
I've been wanting her to come on the show for a long period of time. She's an amazing woman of Filipino background who is the executive officer of the Victorian Immigrant Refugee and Women's Coalition.
Wow.
Really, really dynamic lady who does a lot for diversity and for women's rights. So that would be very interesting.
Stay tuned. Gorgeous. And today's show and last week's shows will be podcast up on the Detours podcast section of joy.org.au later on today. So tune in. You can hear today's show with Dan from New Zealand.
And I really need to plug the Bake Off if I can. I can do that.
The Bake Off, Lynn?
Oh, funny you should ask, Greg. it kicks off at 3 o'clock this afternoon for the cake auction. But get down there earlier and have a few bevvies. And my co-host is actually Dulcie Du Jour, I believe.
Oh, so you're hosting, so Lindsay?
I am hosting, as I do every year. Thank you, Gregoire. And also to Lawrence from Gembrook. Next time I'm up there, I'll look you up, darling. Okay, I'm done.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend, Jodie and Lindsay.
You too. Good.
Bye, y'all.
Melbourne's most uplifting station is about to take you to new heights. Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.